seriously, it's a hefty one. And it's, so it's the perfect time that we're doing it, first of all, to start, because her birthday was just September 11th. Yeah. And on this past September 11th of 2022, it was Mary Beth Tinning's 80th birthday.
And she lives.
Because she is living.
Straight up evil.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing. And now you're trying to feed him your bodily fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
fans. Had a dog, fish, a tampon, and out of the garbage. It ain't right
to Bible you, pages, but you can pretend like you were a dog.
Wow.
Connected.
I don't want to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hi.
It's a Katie case.
Katie case.
Casey.
Carrie
in the scary sunshine.
Mary
band.
Beth.
I don't know.
Grinning.
Scary.
Gary Beth shitting.
Mary not winning.
Covering who, Quinny?
Mary Beth Rowe Tinning. I'd like to dedicate the episode to my longtime, old time bestie, Jennifer Cole, who has been asking me to do this episode since we started the freaking podcast.
Wow.
Literally.
Carly, I feel like you've said a lot of people have been like, cover Mary Beth Tinning.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We've got a lot. Like, Jen is not alone.
People want to hear.
Mary Hex Tinning. They want to hear all about her.
Oh, quick disclaimer.
A
lot of violence towards children and child death in this episode. More than we've met. More, almost up to Wes Nickel Mines level.
Oh, great, great reminder, Quinny. I'm really glad you said it.
Some people don't like the kid episode. Some people are like, no, I'm not doing kids.
So I get it.
If that's the case, go ahead and skip this one.
This one is rough. This one's really rough. It is not suitable for children. Then again, or any of our episodes.
Do not let your kids listen to this show ever for any reason. For a second.
At all. Mary Beth Rowe Tinning was born on September 11th of 1942 in the small town of Duanesburg, New York. It is literally not even 10 miles from Schenectady. And in fact, I think it is considered Schenectady County. Her zodiac sign is a Virgo. There is little information available that is regarding Mary Beth's formative years, but we do know some stuff. During some point, Mary Beth's father was actually deployed overseas fighting in World War II. Her mother actually worked in women-driven factories during that time of World War II, when women were really going to work. And so that's her parents weren't around. And because they weren't around that much, Mary Beth was really tossed around a lot of her relatives. And she went from aunts and uncles and stayed at their houses and so on and so forth. Now, a lot of psychologists say that emotional neglect from your parents can cause some real serious issues when you get older.
I feel like we've never talked about that before.
No one who goes on to commit violent offenses has been neglected at all.
Yeah, seriously. So it's actually this really, vulnerable time in their lives. The child or teenager needs reassurance. And when the parents are not there to give them the reassurance, it obviously causes some damage too. The kids. One elderly relative actually told Mary Beth one time that she was an unwanted and accidental pregnancy.
Cool.
Seriously, though, if she was, shut it.
And so when her little brother actually reached adolescence, Mary Beth told him, "You were the only one they wanted, not me." Needless to say, her and her brother had a very estranged relationship.
Trauma all around.
Yeah.
All the trauma. Cool.
100%. After Mary Beth's dad completed his active duty, He worked as a press operator at a nearby General Electric factory, which was at that time, it was the area's largest employer. As an adult, Mary Beth once claimed that her father actually abused her when she was a child. During a police interview in 1986, she actually told an investigator that her father had beaten her and that he had locked her in a closet.
Does anyone corroborate this in any capacity?
Like no.
Brother corroborate.
This is alleged. Nope. This is alleged. A lot of things that Mary and also Mary Beth recants a lot of statements. Very important. They are all alleged. We do not know which ones are true and actually fact because Mary Beth freaking lies out the ass.
Like a rug. Lying liar face who lies.
Lying liar
face who lies. I feel like somehow Mary Beth and Diane Downs would just get on swimmingly.
Totally.
I feel like they would
be besties. They would be absolute besties. But then during her court testimony, she actually denied that her dad had bad intentions and said, quote, "My father hit me with a fly swatter because he had bad hands and his hands were not of much use. And when he locked me in my room, I guess he thought I deserved it."
Okay.
Mary Beth also attempted to commit suicide multiple times. She was an average student at Duanesburg High School, and she graduated from that high school in 1961. Afterwards, she worked at a bunch of different unskilled labor, and eventually she settled for a job as of all things, a nursing assistant at Ellis Hospital in Schenectady, New York. It's even crazy that we're talking about this because us three Quinnies actually went to college in Schenectady. Well, Carly, did you go to college in Schenectady or just Michael did?
I just attended the
everything.
I lived our life with us. Yeah, that's all I did.
Carly didn't actually go to school there. She was just there with us all the time. However,
mandated.
So she's working at Ellis Hospital, right? Which is about, like I said, it's about 10 miles north of Duanesburg. In 1963, Mary Beth actually meets Joseph Tinning after her friends set them up on a blind date. And they were married in 1965. So just two years later, they got married. And they actually had their first child by May of 1967. And her name was Barbara. Then in January of 1970, they had Joseph Jr. Okay. So first two kids are born. October of 1971, Mary Beth's father actually dies of a heart attack. According to Joseph Sr., Mary Beth did not take the loss of her father very well. She acted really over emotional and was very depressed. Psychologists also say that when you lose the parent that has neglected you, the grief is really kind of different. Although her father, she claimed he was abusive, you know, she claimed he was never around. Once he actually passes away, it's like they handle their grief is different. Yeah. Grief is different, basically. And so her husband, you know, he really claimed that she really struggled with that.
I really struggle with him, though.
Oh, we're going to talk about it. Oh,
I struggle with the fact. Ooh. Did the dad even die of a heart attack? That's what I struggle with.
Yeah, we don't even know. We don't know. This is not suitable for children. This is what I put in my notes. Not suitable for children. Beware. No. This is where shit starts to go really south, and not in a good way because we all know how I feel about the South. December 26th of 1971, the Tinnings' third child was born. Her name was Jennifer. She was born at St. Clair's Hospital, and sadly, she was born with hemorrhagic meningitis, as well as multiple brain abscesses that had developed in utero. Why would something like that be the case, you ask, for a little tiny newborn infant baby? The reason for that is Mary Beth wanted the baby to be born on Christmas. So she took an inanimate object and she stuck it up herself to try to make the baby be born on Christmas. Okay, Quinnies?
Okay.
Mary Beth admitted, yes, that she had actually tried to induce labor herself by inserting a sharp foreign object into her uterus because she wanted the baby to be born on Christmas.
Okay. She is, in fact, a paid employee of Ellis Hospital as a nursing assistant, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she believes a sharp object isn't going to, you know, cause a pregnancy loss is going to just put her into labor.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Yeah. Everybody around Mary Beth
is like, something's wrong with Mary Beth. There's something wrong with Mary Beth, and we're not going to talk about
100%. We're just going to, and they just avoid it. Right. And so Mary Beth just gets to do what Mary Beth does because everybody just lets her fucking do it. Poor little baby Jennifer only lived for 8 days before she passed away. The autopsy revealed that she had several abscesses on her brain. That very same month, on January 20th, which was only 17 days after Jennifer's death, Mary Beth rushes her 2-year-old Joseph Jr. to the Ellis Hospital emergency room in Schenectady, New York.
This is the second trip to the ER with the kids at this point.
Mm-hmm. Already. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. She claimed that the baby had suffered from a seizure and that he had also choked on his own vomit. One source says that the hospital kept Joseph for only 3 hours. Other sources say that he was actually kept for longer than that. I have found another source that said he was kept for a couple days to be monitored. Regardless, he was discharged from the hospital. Just a few hours later, after he was released from the hospital, Mary Beth brings Joseph Jr. back to the same Ellis Hospital, and he's unconscious. She claims that he told her he was tired, and so she let him go and lay down for a nap. And when she came back to check on him, she found him, quote, blue and tangled up in his sheets. Since no one had actually been around to see Joseph Jr.'s seizures, the doctors actually ruled cause of death as cardiorespiratory arrest, and actually no autopsy was performed.
How though? Like, okay. How?
I don't get it. I don't understand. There were definitely people that were suspicious of her. There were doctors and some nurses that were concerned. But again, it's like Queenie just said a little while ago, it's like people just didn't speak up about it. Nobody said anything.
I guess it is really inconceivable.
Right. People don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
That it's real. Ugh, it's rough. So on March 1st of 1972, about 7 weeks later, after Joseph Jr.'s death, 4-year-old, almost 5-year-old Barbara was now rushed to Ellis Hospital after she too also suffered miraculously from a seizure and was having convulsions. The hospital wanted to keep Barbara for observation due to Joseph Jr.'s recent suspicious death. But weird ass Mary Beth says nope and straight up refuses to let them do any research on Barbara or keep Barbara. Sure enough, she brings Barbara home. A couple hours later, she brings Barbara back again, and she's pretty much dead on arrival. They put her in ICU, and she suffered from brain damage at this point, and she tragically died hours later. An autopsy actually was performed on Barbara, and it was because she had suffered convulsions as well as a fever while at the hospital. The doctors attributed her death to Ray or Ray's syndrome, mm-hmm. which is a super rare but horribly awful disease that causes swelling of the brain and liver damage. Makes no sense to me.
So we have first kid dying of meningitis, right?
Yep.
Second kid dying of
cardiorespiratory arrest. Yep.
And then
with no autopsy. And now we have another
completely rare,
crazy
cause of death.
Yeah.
Okay.
Random, yep. Yeah.
Same mom.
Same family. So
same common denominator.
And that's a good point. And that's a good point that you say right there, Quinny, and something I should mention. So now at this point, people around town locally, right, are starting to feel really bad. And they're starting to say, like, this woman, she must have some kind of genetic curse at this point, right? Like, what else could it be? Like, if these kids are dying this early, then there must be kind of some sort of something wrong with them, with their genetics, right? Certain sources say that it happened actually in 1971. Other sources say it happened in 1972. Regardless, Mary Beth quickly gets pregnant with her fourth child, and she has a son named Timothy. Not even 1 month later after giving birth to him, she brings an unconscious newborn baby back to the hospital, and there he dies. The death was attributed to SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome.
So she has the worst luck of all of all the people.
Pretty much.
Of everybody ever.
The ER doctor who tried to save Timothy didn't actually know about the other Tinning children's deaths, and no autopsy was performed. Even though the doctor reported the unexplainable death to the medical examiner, the medical examiner failed to report this to his superior.
No.
Oh my God.
It's rough. It's really, really rough. So and it's not going to get any better.
It makes you feel like if it happened 10 years prior or 10 years later, people would have been like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
It was during like such a time.
It was. And this is just the time to, it is. You're so right, Quinny. You're spot on, because they also didn't know a lot about, it's not that they didn't know a lot about psychology and like your psychosis, but they were just learning about a lot of these things. For example, another one is postpartum depression and psychosis.
No one is talking to her about those things either. Mm-hmm. From
they
what
didn't
I understand.
Know about them. Yeah. Like right. They knew about them, but they didn't know a lot of research and they hadn't done, and they didn't know the amount of damage that it would cause to a woman, that it can cause to a woman. So in 1974, Joseph Sr., Mary Beth's husband, notices that his food is like tasting super weird and like bitter. He talks to a couple of his family members about it, and the family members are like, yo, dude, you need to go to the doctor for this and like, you know, get checked out. His family's like feeling a little suspicious about Mary Beth. Well, Joseph refuses to go to the hospital until he got so badly poisoned that he was actually hospitalized. And when they took his blood, they found high levels of barbiturates in his system. Now, it was later revealed that Mary Beth actually stole medicine from, sources say different things. Some sources say from a neighbor, some sources say from her nephew who actually had an epileptic issue. She was actually crushing them up into powder form and she was putting them in Joseph's food as well as his drinks. And he finally one day took a sip of grape juice and got so badly sick that, like I said, he had to be hospitalized. And that's when he found out that he had high levels of barbiturates in his system. Joseph Tinning declined to press charges against his wife. Okay.
I'm at a loss.
He must, it's so hard to understand. He must think that she is so messed up from all of this.
That he feels bad for her or something.
Like, yeah. Like we've seen people that we know, friends of ours, not be able to conceive naturally and have people ask them like the most insensitive questions ever. Like, well, what's the problem? Is it something wrong with you? Is it something wrong with your husband? How come you can't have kids? Like a lot of people are talking about Mary Beth and being like, there's something wrong with her because all of her kids keep dying. And he's like trying to deal with the fact that he knows she's mentally ill, that there's something seriously wrong. And I just keep trying to remind myself that no one thinks that someone is just going to kill child after child after child. In his mind, like all of her babies are just dying. And so she's doing these
crazy things because she's losing all of her babies.
Yes.
I think he has to be just head over heels in love with her, that he just is blind. I don't know.
It's so hard to understand.
It is. I can't figure it out. I can't fucking figure it out.
I can't wrap my head around the fact that he would have no idea of what's truly going on.
Yeah, it's a crock of shit to me.
Have some sort of idea. If he's in denial because he loves her so much, in denial
he doesn't want to believe it.
And the fact that that's true. But when now it's bad enough that all your kids are dying at the hands of your wife, whether you're wanting to admit that to yourself or not, there's got to be something there that you're seeing, a sign, a red flag of some kind. And now your life is at stake.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make
any
sense.
How do you not get her help in any way or press charges at the very least?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
I can't.
She's trying to kill you, man.
Like, I know. I just don't get it.
Irrefutable at this point.
Yeah, she did.
I almost wonder if like he's almost not all there too. There's almost a part of me. I just, so
no one was getting, no one was. Nobody was looking into their fucking mental health at this time. So
right.
We'll
exactly.
never know what we'll the never hell's really wrong know. With him.
100. You're so right. So to keep plowing forward, March 30th of 1975, their fifth child was born. Little Nathan Tinning. He was only 5 months old when an ambulance rushed his lifeless body to the emergency room. But this time it was, shocker, a different hospital than the last children, Quinnies. Oh, why do you ask? Oh, that's because every time that a kid would die, Mary Beth would just move away because, you know, they didn't want the neighbors to be suspicious of them. So they would need to relocate.
This is why it's so even more difficult to believe that he doesn't know.
And just keeps going along with it. Mary Beth claimed that she had been driving with Nathan in the car when she heard him, quote, gurgle, and then saw him turn blue. An autopsy was performed.
Oh.
And again, because they didn't know the family history, they ruled this child's death acute pulmonary edema, which is a condition that is caused by excess fluid in the lungs, which makes it hard or practically impossible to breathe. And this condition can be caused by many factors, including suffocation and smothering.
So now we have a cause of death that matches or could match something being done to the kid.
Correct.
So do they launch a full-on criminal investigation?
No police are called. No child protective services are called. No one is informed. No one's informed. No one. And to make matters even worse, as if it could not get any more freaking sickening or twisted, in August, late August of 1978, the Tinnings adopt a newborn boy. Why?
How?
How? Who allowed it? Where was like any research done on their history or the fact that four of her children were already dead? I don't know. Makes no sense to me, but they were able to adopt a child, little Michael Tinning. He was only a few months old when they adopted him. He was a newborn. October 29th of 1978, Mary Beth gives birth to her sixth child. Different sources say different things. I am going with the fact that it was Mary Frances, and this daughter was only 3.5 months old when she died. When I look up about how Mary Frances died, she was rushed to the emergency room, which was directly across the street from Mary Beth Tinning's apartment. Okay, Quinnies, because remember I told you she had moved? So now she's in a new apartment and it's across the street from the hospital, Quinnies.
That is convenient.
Okay.
Very, very
so she goes running across the street and she says that the baby is, what do you think the baby's having, Quinnie? A seizure. Having a seizure. The staff was able to actually revive Mary Frances. And exactly 3.5 weeks later, Mary Beth returned to the hospital with Mary Frances again in full cardiac arrest. She was then revived, but had irreversible brain damage. She died 2 days later after being taken off of life support. Exactly 9 months later comes baby number 7, a boy. He also dies at 3.5 months old. Mary Beth claims to have found both of these babies blue and lifeless in their cribs. That child, multiple sources say multiple things. That child, baby number 7, all I know is that he was a boy and his name was either Jonathan or Angelo. So the majority of my sources say that it's Jonathan. I did not find any additional information on another boy. I did find, they did actually adopt another girl, and Joseph Sr. got a bond with this little child, with this little girl, and had a special connection with her. Well, Mary Beth didn't like that very much, so she sent the baby back. Okay.
Oh, just return it.
So just returned it like it's a something like store bought off the fucking shelf.
Mm-hmm. Oh yep. My God. Well,
meanwhile, mothers exactly all over the world struggle to even conceive children. It's so sick. Blood boiling. In late February of 1981, Mary Beth still has a baby. She has Michael, the one that she adopted in 1978.
He lasted longer than anyone else.
Yes. He did.
So weird.
And guess what? By this point, they're like, okay, well, Michael should survive, right? Because Michael is not one of her biological kids.
Right.
So he should survive, right? The genetic curse of the Tinnings shouldn't happen anymore because Michael is adopted. Michael supposedly fell down the stairs while trying to greet the mailman. An ambulance was called.
Diane really liked mailmen as well.
I can't.
She did. Diane had a mailman thing as well.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes.
So an ambulance was called to the scene. They did treat Michael for facial cuts and a mild concussion, but the ambulance and the doc said that he would be okay, that he was going to be all right. 1 week later at 7:30 a.m., March 3rd, 1981, Mary Beth called her sister-in-law and told her that she, quote, couldn't wake Michael up. The frantic sister-in-law tells Mary Beth, you have to bring him to the emergency room. The two of them live directly across the street from a hospital at this time. Mm-hmm. But do you think that Mary Beth brings little Michael across the street to the hospital? No, she doesn't.
The first time she doesn't want to run there immediately. It's
no, she doesn't. She instead calls her pediatrician who is located
Stalin.
10 minutes away.
Stalin tells
the pediatrician that Michael isn't feeling well. But she doesn't tell them that it's an emergency. She just said that Michael wasn't feeling well. So the unsuspecting nurse says, okay, Mary Beth, no big deal. Just bring the little boy in the morning at 10 a.m. Mary Beth arrives at 10 a.m. She's in complete hysterics. And we see the pattern and the cycle performed yet again. Michael was strapped in a blanket and he was not breathing. Mary Beth was screaming. And when the nurse took the child from Mary Beth, she unwrapped the blanket to find the child blue and dead.
I'm sorry. No, hold on. Pause. Okay. Hold on a second. Because
it's really hard. It's really hard.
It's a lot. There's a lot. My thoughts and emotions are churning. But right at this moment, the thing that you just were talking about, she comes in at her designated appointment time.
Yes.
In hysterics.
Yep. Yep.
With the blue child, dead baby. Like,
yes.
she's not even going to like get there like a little early because like, oh no, we were on our way and he's blue. Or
nope.
Yeah, woke up this morning and you just opened up the doors at 8 and I had to get here. She comes at her designated time slot.
Just being like, oh, it's something happened.
That alone, regardless of everything else, case in point, done. Like we're done. Like yep. Nurses, doctors, like we're done now. Like this is obvious.
They tried administering CPR to the child. An ambulance was called in addition to rush Michael to Albany, but it was unfortunately too late and he was already dead. They could not revive him. An autopsy was performed and one of the medical examiners found acute pneumonia in one of Michael's lungs. This one's real frustrating to me. The medical examiner actually decided that if he called anyone, that they would not be, because he had the pneumonia in his lung, acute pneumonia in his lung, the medical examiner felt that they would not be able to rule that out as a cause of death. And so therefore he did not call anyone because he thought, oh, it would just be ruled pneumonia anyways, and they wouldn't be able to rule it out. And there was nothing else found. He could not find any other issues besides that. And so, because they would just say it was pneumonia anyways, that is the reason why this medical examiner made no call. It's unfathomable.
It's no words.
It's like just unfathomable.
No words.
It really is. It really is. I know. Repeating, like I said, every single time that a child died, her and Joe would pack up their stuff and they would move away. And this was in order to avoid the neighbors being suspicious of them, as well as being able to relocate to find new hospitals and new doctors.
Yeah, new hospitals and new doctors. If you are at the point where your seventh child has just died, right? Are we at seven? Six?
No, we're on eight. Michael is eight.
Oh, okay. Michael's eight. Okay, excuse me.
Your
eighth child has now died. Like, you're not really looking for a new doctor. You're going to New York City to look for a new doctor, or you're going to Montreal to look for a new doctor.
Right.
You're
no, going she's to, staying
you're
in
going
the
to
same,
Boston. Like, if you're really concerned,
same area.
about, like, if that's your thing and I'm going to pick up and move and try a new doctor, you're going to go to a doctor in like a big city with big hospitals. No,
if you're trying to show that you actually care.
Right. But like her husband is also doing this. So that's why I'm like, you're trying new doctors, but it's no different to drive from Duanesburg to Schenectady, right? Like Quinny's saying it, they're like 10 miles apart. Like you're just trying different. Yep. You're not looking for the best doctor.
No, you're looking to hide your shit because they're not communicating with each other.
Which is why I can't understand why the husband's doing it.
At this point, people are starting to get suspicious. Let's not forget that. Yeah. So by this point, because guess what? Mary Beth would do everything exactly the same with every death of every child. And though things like of that nature would include, she would literally have a funeral. The funeral would be open casket with the baby present.
I am telling you. Okay.
And she would put the baby's toys all around the baby. And she would stand next to the coffin as everybody would come and greet her and pay their respects. And she did this with every single child.
And then
after every child, she would bury them with the toys. The rest of the toys she would give away and donate. Then she would take the insurance money from the child and go on a shopping spree and buy everything.
Quinny, roll it back.
She's
getting insurance money every time this happens.
Yes. Yep. Death benefits. She's receiving them and she's spending them. And people are sitting here. Neighbors are watching her do it. Watching her fucking do it.
No. Somehow I missed that previously to this. Mm-hmm. Secondly, now I'm full on board with Joseph Channing Sr. You get the fuck out.
I'm telling you.
I'm so done with the death of eight of your children.
100%.
Whether you're a victim or not.
My sweet little Quinnies, we're almost through it. So Mary Beth was pregnant again with her ninth and last child. However, at the age of 42, Mary Beth did not inform her OBGYN of this pregnancy until she was 5 months pregnant. I wonder why. So Tammy Lynn was born on August 22nd of 1985. The pediatrician recommended to Mary Beth that with this new, normal, healthy, beautiful baby,
give it to someone else.
And the pediatrician recommended that Mary Beth actually keep an eye on this baby with a sleep apnea alarm, which is a machine that monitors your heart rate and the baby's breathing. And if anything is wrong or goes amiss, the alarm goes off. It sounds right. Well, Mary Beth refuses. She refuses this. And she tells the pediatrician, it didn't work before with my other children, with saving my other children. So it's not going to help this time.
You didn't use it, you bitch.
That's what she said. Okay, Mary Beth. Tammy Lynn is the little hero of the story in so many ways. So again, she comes rushing into the hospital, baby in a blanket, not breathing. Here are all these doctors and these nurses come rushing out of the rooms and they're trying to revive Tammy Lynn. One of the nursing students, and this student looks up and she looks over at Mary Beth Tinning. And Mary Beth Tinning has a compact out of her purse and she's looking in the compact at herself and fixing her hair while they're trying to revive Tammy Lynn, okay, in the middle of the hospital. Well, the student found this really suspicious and she's like, something isn't right. This woman is not acting normal. And so she tells one of the other docs and finally they call the police and they call CPS and they say, we think that this death of this baby is a suspicious death. And when the Schenectady chief of police actually heard about the amount of suspicious deaths, he actually went to visit the district attorney. Well, the district attorney calls the chief medical examiner for an autopsy. According to the medical examiner, there was no metabolic illness in any of the Tinning children. And the pathologist rules this death, Tammy Lynn's death, as suffocation with a soft object, okay, as the cause of death.
Finally, someone is saying it.
Seriously. On February 4th of 1986, New York State troopers interrogated Mary Beth for 7 hours. The head main officer, who was actually friends with the Tinning family and had been for a lot of years, was actually the one to confront Mary Beth very gently and told her that it was not statistically possible for 9 babies to die of natural causes. It ain't real. Sorry. And she admits two, smothering Tammy Lynn, Nathan, and Jonathan, but she refuses to confess to killing any of the other children.
Why those ones? Why them? In her mind, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Why?
And now Joe knows too. Like, she told this to Joe. She told this to Joseph too.
And this is just like hotly contested. This whole, her whole confession, all of it. The fact that she comes back later and tries to say that she was pushed to make that confession.
Yeah.
Like, what, lady, they knew you. They handled you with kid gloves. You talked to the cops without a lawyer, which just don't ever do that. They read you your rights. You weren't even handcuffed. Like, no.
Get out of here.
Yeah. You told.
100%. She even signed a waiver. She even signed a waiver, and it was used against her in court. So even her recanting it, it didn't matter. June 22nd of 1987, Mary Beth Tinning's trial began in the Schenectady Superior Court.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Can you even imagine?
It's crazy.
I would be there every day.
And we would be
same.
There.
We would so be there. And Justice Quinney said Mary Beth did in fact recant her confession, but it didn't matter because it was still admitted into evidence. Trial lasted for 3 weeks, and the there were tons of witnesses. Tons of nurses that witnessed her behavior, psychiatrists that witnessed her refusal to use the protection for the babies, doctors testified against her. She had numerous people. Neighbors testified against her. She had a lot of people turn against her. Finally. Like, fucking finally. And on July, but this is gonna piss some people off right now, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. On July 18th of 1987, Mary Beth was convicted of second degree murder and for showing a depraved indifference for human life, okay? Mm-hmm. She was charged for second degree murder of the death of Tammy Lynn and Tammy Lynn alone. She was not charged for killing any other children. It was believed by investigators that the other deaths would be too hard to prove. She was sentenced to 20 years to life at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women. Mary Beth was denied parole 6 times. Every time she tried to go for parole, she would show no remorse, and they just kept denying her and denying her and denying her. Eventually, in 2011, Mary Beth told the parole board that she just knew that her daughter was going to die anyway, and so she just, quote, did it. In August of 2018, after serving 31 years, 75-year-old Mary Beth Tinning was granted parole. She was released under court supervision for the rest of her life. No. Her husband, Joseph, was there at the prison to pick her up on the day of her release. Okay,
Queenies? Literally.
Oh, God.
There was one more thing I thought was so interesting that I did want to say. Okay, Michael Stone, the forensic psychologist who actually developed, like, he came up with Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Like, he's mm-hmm. the one that actually, like, invented it, okay? Has his own mental health scale from 1 to 22, with 22 being the most dangerous ranking killers, basically. He diagnosed her at a level 7 of highly narcissistic and attention seeking. They also never proved, no diagnosis has ever been proved, but Munchausen syndrome by proxy, where you harm your child or make your child appear to be sick in order to gain attention for yourself.
Dee Dee Blanchard.
Bipolar disorder, she was also diagnosed with, as well as narcissistic personality disorder. Because again, she was so obsessed with everything being on her, everything being about her. If the attention was ever on one of those babies, bet your ass the baby was going to be out. So yeah, Quinnies, final thoughts. What do we think, Quinnies?
I guess got a couple things.
This like okay. Literally make my head hurt. Like my head hurts.
Like my brain is just on fire. Me too. At the moment. We say it every time, like mental health, get people help. Like, come on. Joseph. You can go. You can get right out. Also, like, I know it's like apples and oranges, okay? But like Adnan Syed, convicted of the murder of Haman Lee, which I don't agree that that's true. But however, he got convicted of it. An 18-year-old kid got convicted and sentenced to life in prison plus 30 years for the one murder of Haman Lee. Okay, fine. That's like a whole other thing. And I will cover that probably fairly soon because I'm deep in that one. The brown 18-year-old killed gets life in prison plus 30 years. Mary Beth Tinning kills 8 of her children. And she gets to come out. She gets to live a free life now. She's, even if she's 75, I don't care how old she was. Like, I don't care. She gets to get out ever.
She's a free woman.
For any time, at any point. How does that make sense in this world? I don't understand.
Picked up by her husband on the day of her release.
Who maintains that she's innocent?
Still maintains that she is innocent. Yep.
I mean, I feel like they basically just locked her up for as long as they could on the one charge and like hope for the best.
And hope she could, because she couldn't have more kids.
She couldn't have more kids.
That's it.
And she got rave reviews in prison too. Oh, they loved her and said she was the most kind, generous woman they'd ever met in their lives. Rave reviews, perfect behavior in prison. She even helped people.
There was another woman that
all of them.
All of them.
Michelle Carter.
Sick. Thank you. Yep.
I don't know, Quinny. This is just this is so crazy. This really does make me grateful for the mild progress that we've made as a society in this department. When something happens to a kid, typically it's taken extremely seriously now.
Yes.
And you're don't think this would happen now, which we can be mildly happy about.
There's no guarantee of any of it.
But I feel like something to this extent, 9 kids.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like she would have been stopped sooner. I don't know why. I just feel like that. This case always reminds me of Andrea Yates.
Yeah.
You know, because I also feel like there's something going on with Mary Beth being pregnant all the time.
She likes the attention.
Not just the baby. She likes the attention, but I feel like, I wonder, and we'll probably never know because it's her medical records, but we know that in Andrea Yates' case, their doctor was like, no more kids. And she's not safe with the children in this situation. And the doctor told them, don't ever leave her alone with the kids. She has to be supervised. Mm-hmm. She has to be supervised. And what do? They leave her alone. And then something like this happens.
Yeah.
Now, we have the benefit of knowing what happens at the end. So we can say, well, you should have said whatever. But I really find it hard to believe, even if the ER doctors don't know that Mary Beth is repeatedly coming in with dead children. There is a doctor somewhere who knows that, like who knows that this keeps happening over and over again, and who has said like, no more kids.
Apparently a neighbor asked her, I think after the 4th or 5th child had died, one of her neighbors that was one of her friends asked her, you know, Mary Beth, why do you keep having kids if they obviously like have something wrong and they keep dying, right? And Mary Beth proceeded to look at the neighbor and basically said, because having children is what we do and it's my job. And so that's what I have to do.
Fucking yes, Quinny. I'm so glad that you found that, because I feel like that is very much at the root of this.
It's what she felt. It's just like she just thought it was just her role and her process.
I wonder if her husband thought that too.
Yeah.
Because
I'm thinking just
like Andrea Yates.
He's still making babies with her.
Right.
Like, Do the tango, my friend.
Duty's like, constantly impregnating her.
Liable for impregnating her.
Can you imagine how many women have to be so mad at this woman, though, and have to have so much hatred for this woman?
Right.
That this woman has got to be so fucking fertile that she can have that many children and then they don't even get to live their lives? Oh my, like 9 children. That's crazy
And literally,
it's already crazy.
Healthy children.
Right.
Yes.
Like totally all healthy, pretty much. No. Yeah, exactly.
I just have such a hard time believing that somebody did not say, don't leave her alone with the kids. Why does this only happen when Mary Beth is alone with the kid? Why is it always just Mary Beth? Yes. Why is it always her with the baby every time?
You're so right.
I know. And that's what makes me realize that Joseph is just a fucking culprit with her. Like
he's baked into this.
He's never with her. He's never called the 911. He's never bringing the kid over. Like I found the kid blue. I don't know what happened.
No. And apparently he wore the same suit to every funeral, Quinny's.
I'm almost glad that they're still together. Do you want to know why? Because maybe that means he hasn't been going out there getting anybody else pregnant and allowing them to do whatever.
Yeah, because he obviously has like the most fertile sperm in all of New York.
So like hopefully he was celibate the entire time she was in
fucking
hope
prison.
So, but like, probably not. Who even knows? Like, wow. Especially with people like that who are just like, well, this is my job. This is what I do. Like, this is what women do. Like, oh man, what can we take away from this, Gwynnies?
Oh my God.
When you just tell your, you know, you don't have to divulge all the secrets about your relationship, but maybe just like say shit to your friends on occasion, or a friend or a coworker, you know, hey, I, you know, my wife has lost 6 children, and every time that she loses a baby, she immediately gets pregnant again. Does that seem normal to you? You know what I mean? Like, just float it around. Like, sometimes you're too into each other and you're not realizing that you're toxic. The sister-in-law. Okay, so the fucking sister-in-law. Again, this reminds me of Andrea Yates with the mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that it's not right, but no one is willing to say anything.
Say anything.
Especially to the guy.
Right.
They don't want to say, and because it's his sister, it's like,
she's not going to tell him. Right.
Don't like
and
that.
She was, and she was there the whole time, and she saw a bunch of it. And
I think this is a fucking gender roles thing. I really do. That it's like, you don't say to your brother.
And it was the 70s.
Something's wrong.
So it makes sense. It makes sense. It's the 70s
but then,
and 80s.
Okay. If it's her job, according to him, to bear his children, that's how this works. How, like, then why are you not just keeping the children alive to continue being a mother? That's your job, according to him.
Because she loved the attention of having them die.
Right. But in his mind, like on his side,
like he just thought that she was so messed up from it that he just believed. And still, I mean, like we said, he still does to this day. She's a master manipulator, obviously. Yeah. She managed to manipulate hundreds of people over a period of 14 years while she killed these
medical
children.
Professionals. Like,
100%. So it doesn't surprise me that she also manipulated the husband. I think he just literally thought she was so fucked up and damaged that he just went along with it. Quinnies?
I don't know. I think everybody, but I just feel like everybody's disgusting. Guilty. Everybody's terrible.
Just, I don't know. Talk to people. Tell people what the fuck is going on.
Get a therapist, please.
Just everybody. Stop devaluing mental health. Everybody. Just
even if you think you're fine, like there's totally no real issue in your life, just do it anyway. Ask your friends, hey, you're getting pregnant a lot. Are you okay?
Also, it does strike me as a little bit weird. It's always like she's the only one at the hospital.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't hear about other people showing up being like, oh my God, Mary Beth, I'm here for you.
Exactly.
This is like her thing that she does by
the
herself.
The only thing we hear is the sister-in-law saying, hey, go bring your adopted son
the sister
to the hospital because you live
the
across
sister-in-law
the
just tells her shit from the side all the time 100% because that's the thing. Anytime that she had people around, like it was a show. So for example, like when she would also have the people over at the house after the funeral, like she was basically walking around like as though she was throwing like a Christmas party. So like that's how she greeted people, like at the funeral, like at the service for the babies.
I'm sorry, like you're telling me that everyone there is not like,
yeah, like, oh, would you like a shrimp cocktail? Like, yeah.
Oh my,
it's a rough one. I'm glad it's over, Quinny.
Yeah,
I'm really glad it's over. I'm glad we thanks,
okay, but
Jen.
Really
thank
quick,
you.
Does Mary so Beth Tinney not look like a cross between Eileen Wuornos and Green?
Oh,
if you mix those two women together,
Eileen Wuornos
equals Mary Beth Tinney.
Eileen Wuornos and Deborah Green.
They look like they had a love child and it's her.
My God, Quinny, that is so crazy. The whole time I was like, she gives me Eileen vibes.
Hell yeah. Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, make sure that if you ever suspect child abuse or neglect, please contact your local child protective services office or your local law enforcement agency. And the three most important things are to recognize if a child is being harmed. Number one, to recognize the signs. Number two, to talk to the child. And number three is to report it.
Listen to your medical students. Going, hey, something's not right with this person.
Yeah, thank God for her, huh? Thank God for that one medical student. Yeah, for sure.
Because if it wasn't she knows she wasn't getting paid for saying that.
Exactly.
You know, she's working her hours that she has to complete the to get the MD
program. Yeah.
I also just can't help but feel like Tammy Lynn's little spirit was like, no, you're not going to do this again, Mom.
She put a stop to it. She really did.
Oh, it's awful.
Jesus, Quinnies. Oh my God.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.